This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey everybody, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Welcome to another Town Hall Academy. Got a great, great show for you. This episode is going to focus on the human side of service. Really? Humans? There's not robots on our counters? Imagine that. It's the part of the business where we overlook it so much. My guests believe it'll have a difference in trust, sales, and long-term loyalty in the business. And there is no doubt that's what we're all striving for. Glad to have you here. Love that you're with us 10 years in doing this. So look, we really appreciate the great sponsors that we've had over all these years and including our great partners. Hey, did you know that Napa Trax has on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Trax on the web at napatracs.com. Hey, how well does your team know their stuff? Test their automotive skills with the Today's Class Basic, Advanced, or Service Advisor quizzes. It's a quick, effective way to spot gaps and grow stronger teams. Take the quizzes now at todaysclass.com/TC quiz. Let's get started. You know who's with me? A great friend, known him for I don't know how many years now, Greg Bunch from Transformers Institute. Hello, Greg.
Glad to be here, sir. Glad to see your smiling face once again.
We are glad you are here. And Jen Davis. Hello, Jen.
Hello.
Sales and training specialist. Damn, do I love that word, specialist. That's my word, everyone. That's my word. Look, too much is going on in the industry about our counters. Period. Done. Case closed. If the sales aren't growing, there's only one place that maybe you want to look at marketing, Greg, right? But you also want to look at the quality of the relationships that we are having, that we're building. I don't know if it's this episode. We're going to do two parts of this. You're going to see two episodes with Transformers. And I can't remember if this is the episode or the one next about the cold calls that we, you know, the mystery shopper calls that we have. And I'm going to tell you, you need to put your hand up if you're a shop owner and get someone to do that for you. Even if it's a buddy, and sit in his house and have him call your place and tell him what to ask, you may just leave with your head down, beat to death, wondering how the hell are you surviving what you're doing and what could you possibly be if you got things right and you brought specific training. And this episode is going to talk about soft skills. And guys, let me just be a little pontificating right now. I'm on an advisory board for 2-year college. And we know they're trying and starting to work on soft skills because the college administration realizes that the more young people that are coming into skilled trades and into these kinds of schools, that they've got to step up and do this. And we came up with a list of, you know, I don't know, 25 or 30 things that we know our young people need to have as soft skills. And even the people that we have on our counters that may be mature, if you don't practice them, you lose them almost.
Absolutely.
Well, think about our industry, and if I can jump in here, the role of a service advisor for years and years, the value that we've put on the position there is their automotive knowledge. Oh, okay, they were a technician before. They were a mechanic before. They know cars. They know how to build estimates. They know how a timing belt works and a fuel injector works and a catalytic converter works, and that's great. That's what my customers want. Without any regard to how well do they communicate? How well do they listen? What are those soft skills? Do they share any kind of empathy? I love kind of poking the bear when Jen and I do training. You know, we say, you know, you're in sales and you just see people kind of get electrocuted. Like, I don't want to be called a salesman. I'm a service advisor. I just tell people what they need and let them choose. And I say, well, nothing happens in this world without somebody selling something to somebody. I believe Zig Ziglar said that. I said, these chairs that you're sitting on, this computer you're looking at, the notebook you're writing in, this podium that I'm standing at, everybody sold something to somebody for this world to work. And it's a good thing to be a salesperson. It's a good thing. You make the economy work and get their mindset different. But, you know, when you think of a salesperson, everybody thinks of the used car guy with his hair slicked back and, you know, do I got a deal for you, right? But that's not what service advising should be, although there's some people out there doing it. But, you know, sales truly is a profession. We're in the people business. Yeah, we fix cars, but ultimately we are in the people business.
Exactly. I had to stop because my brain always works on overtime when I listen to you, Greg. And so I have a really cool prop for you when you get up there and do that, okay? And the prop is the profit and loss statement and the first line. It may say revenue, it may say sales, but however you look at it, that's where it all starts. It starts with sales. I'm not in the sales business. Service advising, I love it. Client advocate, I love it. But really underneath, it's like your sales.
Yeah. And I don't feel like enough people understand the emotional side of it. How people make big time emotional decisions. And yet we treat it on the front counter like this just transactional, fast, rushed process where it's like, no, you know, we need to be empathizing, like Greg said, with these callers or customers' pain points and issues and their concerns, and, you know, teaming up with them and making them feel like we are part of this process with them versus, you know, a customer, an anxious customer versus a scary service advisor. So, you know, what I wanted us to chat about is those soft skills, what we're seeing, what's lacking in our industry, because, you know, it's a grudge buy and we don't want to make it feel that way, right? And I feel like these service advisors, bless them, they're also therapists.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That's the word that came to my mind.
Therapists.
Perfect. Did you ever say that, Jen, to an individual and says, really, you're a therapist? And they say, I got it.
Oh, yeah. They are. Yeah. They're the people fixers. They're not the car fixers, right? That's so true.
I'm sorry. In the first 6-7 minutes, I think we nailed it. We can stop. We don't have to go any further.
Let's go get lunch.
I love it. Let's talk about soft skills. I mean, what are you concentrating on?
Well, I think what I hear, and I know Doris and I are going to talk about like mystery shoppers and all that, but, you know, when it comes to just showing genuine active listening and empathy and understanding what our tone and demeanor and, you know, kind of like probing questions to come across as more proactive with our solutions lacks. When I'm working with service advisors, the unfortunate thing is, and I don't want to get too off subject, is they don't have enough margin. You know, they don't have enough time to spend the quality time to build the relationships, create trust, you know, come across as a credible expert, sound really thorough and professional when asking the right questions. And then when they get the answers, like actually take a moment and just humanize that issue that this customers having with this struggle with their car or annoyance, or they're scared because smoke's coming out of you know what. So, you know, it's just we're rushed and we're just losing sight of the human connection of just slowing down and, you know, asking the right questions and being in tune with this person, making them feel like a priority because they really should feel that way. Whether they're calling in or walking in, they should feel like they are that service advisor's main priority in that moment, right?
I had a class the other day where I was teaching some shop owners, right, on phone call listening, empathy. And so we listened to some phone calls. You hear that, like what Jen's saying, number one, it's rushed. And number two, there's just a lack of understanding of how to control a conversation. That these service advisors are answering the question with one word answers. What time do you close? 6 o'clock. Do you have a Dropbox? Yes. Can I tow my car in? Yes. Do you have a tow company? No. Do you have somebody you use? Yes. Like, it's like, oh my gosh. Right? You're just making the customer do all the work when you're supposed to be whatever we want to call it, you know, a customer advocate, a customer specialist, a service advisor. Like, you should be advising them to what are the next steps. And so just getting them to answer a question with a question, beginning to take control of that conversation and do it with a level of empathy, right? And before we got on this call, we were talking about medical stuff. You know, you've got people that work in the emergency room. My oldest daughter is an emergency room nurse. And you get beat up and it's hard to stay empathetic. It's hard to keep your bedside manner, but she knows you have to do it, right? Because what is routine for them in a night, right? You got, oh, we had a stabbing, a gunshot wound, a car accident, and a, you know, somebody fell off a wall, right? That's what she deals with every night. And that's what our customers, you know, we're used to dealing with broken cars every single day. They're not, right? It's a massive, stressful situation. And it doesn't have to be broken. It could be, you know, they're just out of warranty and now they're trying to find another shop. They need maintenance done on it. The check engine light's on. It may not be, you know, what you and I know to be a broken car and they better get off the road. It could be something minor, but they don't know the difference. And when we don't use empathy and help, you know, guide them into reducing their stress, then we wonder why we still have a black eye in our industry.
Guys, please, I got to jump in because my mind's going a mile a minute. When you say these one word answers to questions, do you have a lockbox? Yes. What if we told people that every time a question comes to you, find or get excited? Maybe the word excited is sitting out in front of them on tape to their phone or something. Oh, you use lockboxes? You like lockboxes? Notice my voice went up?
No, but you're right. Everything from like your enthusiasm, I mean, that expresses emotion and care. All these things, you know, we always teach in our classes, you know, always answer a question with your own question. You know, stay in control. You know, instead of, yes, we close at 6 p.m., it's we close at 6 p.m., but what's going on? Talk to me. You know, how can...
Does 6 p.m. work for you?
Yeah. How can I help you? What's, you know, anything to continue this conversation.
All that person said was, okay, thanks, bye.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if it was an existing customer, a new customer. We have no idea why that person asked that question. And most service advisors hung up the phone and go, hey, he asked a question. I answered it. Who's better than me?
Right.
With no like, okay, who was that? I don't know. Are they dropping off? Are they picking up? I don't know. Like, that's our job. And again, Jen, what she says is true. Our service advisors do have a very, it's not like, you know, it's one call every 15 minutes. It's, you know, 10 calls in a 15 minute period. Then it's quiet for an hour. So I get it, right? I've done that job. And sometimes you don't have time to go to the bathroom. But at the end of the day, you can't let that affect your customer service. A friend of mine said one time, you know, he goes, you never go into McDonald's on a lunch hour, which I don't do anyway. But if you did and they just get backed up, so they just start literally throwing cheeseburgers at everybody to make them happy. No, they have a process. They go step by step every single time somebody comes up to that counter. But yet, you know, as service advisors, we take shortcuts sometimes because we're lazy, sometimes because we don't have time. Sometimes we forget all the steps or when somebody comes and drops off. And that's, I think, what's hard about service advisor training and why we need consistent training, consistent role playing, consistent accountability is you can write a ticket, get a customer in and out in probably 5 or 6 steps. But to really do it right, it takes about 24 different steps. And when you get busy, what happens is you start dropping off all the stuff that make that job special or make that customer feel special, make them want to come back, make them trust you. Those are all the things that we skip and we get just process the car in and out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being able to slow down. And every time we do, we're seeing average repair orders just climb through the roof. More importantly, right, 5-star reviews and retention. It's not just that one sale, because we've all seen that too, right? Somebody, you know, they sell like they're selling a timeshare and they're like, if I don't sell it now, they'll never come back, right? That doesn't work either, right? It's selling what they need now. It's preparing them for the next visit, building that trust and rapport, getting their next appointment scheduled. All those steps that we need to put in there that get skipped or never even get trained on.
Yeah. Jen, you and I were doing a discovery call and you said to me, Carm, sales is emotional. And when I think of one word answers, Greg, that's not emotional. One-word answers are not emotional. Yes, 6 p.m., maybe. That's not emotional.
What's wild is, you know, a lot of advisors I work with, they think, right? Like, oh, it's because of our pricing. That's why customers leave or don't come back. And it's like, no, it's poor communication. It's the negative experiences. It's that feeling of not being a priority, of maybe being felt like they were forgotten. A million other reasons, but it's an emotional buying process. And emotion really kicks in when they're on the fence. Should I move forward with this repair? Should I believe this person? Do I feel like they're being transparent? This is all emotion that's driving these decisions. We really want the industry to understand that, like setting the right expectations, connecting with these people on a human level, you know, selling benefits, benefits, right? We're just missing the mark with that because as an industry, we're just on to the next, or we're worried about the phone ringing, or we've got someone in the waiting room and someone standing in front of us. We don't know how to manage it. So if we can connect with our customers on an emotional level, help them understand you are the trusted shop. You are convenient.
Yeah. Key droppers. Absolutely.
I don't remember. Somebody famous said this, you know, people buy from people they know, like, and trust. I don't know if that was Zig Ziglar or Jim Rohn. But think about it. Know, like, and trust are all emotions. I know Carm, so I trust him, and I like him most of the time. No, I'm just kidding.
Greg, just mail me your keys.
Yeah.
I'll just fly down and take the car for a ride. Let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. Hey, Carm here, suggesting you discover a smarter way to train your entire automotive team. Experience powerful, bite-sized training sessions accessible from any device in just 5 minutes daily. It's perfect for technicians, advisors, and managers alike. Today's class prepares your shop for sustained success by reinforcing crucial knowledge. Plus, add a competitive edge with our leaderboard to make learning fun and rewarding for everyone. For effective training that delivers, turn to todaysclass.com. I was thinking about restaurants and the experiences that many of us have. You know, I, almost like from the minute you sit down, you start evaluating what your tip may be, right? And the tip is almost your emotional connection with not only the server, but the restaurant and the quality of food and the chef and a lot of the people you can't see. If you were teaching me to be a better service advisor, client advocate, Jen, and you told me the restaurant story, man, oh man, would I then bring that mental thought to every phone that rang in my shop.
I mean, I've worked with shops that have done such a great job with customer care and kindness and rapport building and showing things, right? Like visual aids and doing all the right things that, speaking of tips, their customers would not only pay their bill, but also they had a tip jar because that many customers were so pleased and they'd split it, you know, between all the guys and gals. But, you know, we don't think about tipping our auto repair service companies, but there are shops that do it so well that they get extra goodies.
If the incentives were right from ownership to all the people in the business, you know, we're looking to pay our people really well based on performance, you could have a tip jar that comes right from ownership based on everyone's success, closing rates, I say, listening to phone calls, all the stuff that you do to measure the quality of your service advisor. I love that idea. Call it. It's an incentive. It's a month-end bonus. It's a tip. It's a tip.
We call them spiffs, but yes. Yes.
I think sometimes when we're speaking to our audience, and again, I think that's why I come from the left and the right and the up and the down in our discussions, is people, they need sometimes just one little crazy thought or word to say, oh, I never thought of that. And that's what you guys are on, to get this soft skills stuff blazoned inside of the heads of our, not all owners that are listening, but please, if you're an owner that's listening and you're kind of turned on by this, we don't expect you to go, you know, yeah, hire Greg's team to come in and help coach you, but you need to have your people learn on their very own. They need to be lockstep with you in listening to these episodes.
So, Carm, if you remember a couple of years ago, we had our summit down in Mexico and you were one of our guests and did some interviews, and our friend and colleague, John DeJulius, gave a great presentation on that. And, you know, he touched on, right, making price irrelevant. It doesn't mean you can charge $500 an hour, but it means the better service somebody has, the less somebody's thinking about the price, right? And he gives the analogy of the, you know, yeah, of course you can go get your hair cut down for $15. But most people, right, they're spending $40, $50, I don't know how much, $60 nowadays. Well, why would you do that when you can get a $15 haircut? It's because that person that's cutting your hair, barber, stylist, whatever, right, built that rapport and trust. And it's like they've made that price irrelevant. And so, but we don't think about that in automotive. And like Jen said, there's, if you talk to service advisors, and the first reason that they will give you for not making a sale is they say, oh, our prices are too high. They're going to find somebody cheaper. Well, sometimes that's going to be true once in a while, and you there's nothing you could do about it. Some people do want the $15 haircut, but at the end of the day, to me, how well did we present the value of what we are offering? How much rapport building? What was that relationship like? I mean, it doesn't give us a reason to overcharge, but it's definitely a reason to charge a fair price for what we do because of the level of service. And at the end of the day, you can get a water pump or a brake job done at, you know, we're in Colorado. There's over, I don't know, 160 outlets, right? Or bays in more than that. I think like 250 bays in Colorado Springs anyway, that you can get a car fixed. The reason they're going to pick somebody and pay a little bit more is that experience and that relationship. Nothing else.
Here's another great mental picture. John DeJulius, we did interview him at your meeting, Greg. And I think he said this on stage, and I think he said it on our episode, the hair salons that have the sign in the window that says, we fix $15 haircuts. As a service advisor, having that soft skill, confidence, and empathy and emotion and know, like, and trust in the back of your mind saying, we fix $99 brake jobs in the back of your head. You don't have to say it to the client, but have that confidence that that's what it is that you do.
When they can speak to that fear, they can speak to that in a way that resonates with your customers, they've got them in the palm of their hands. You know, like no one wakes up excited to drop $1,400 on a suspension job, but if that job's going to get them to their daughter's recital safely and they understand, you know, the service advisor's there to team up with them and they've uncovered these personal concerns and these vehicle concerns and they've taken the time to connect with them, price doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore.
Well, and there's so many little things that we touch on in our classes and talk to owners about. And my dad used to say it all the time, right? Sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it, mm-hmm. Your tone, the level of empathy. We had two service advisors. One was the manager, one was the advisor, but they were both at the counter for a long time. It was Big Brian and Little Brian. So Little Brian was shorter than Big Brian, but Big Brian literally had double the average repair order of Little Brian. And I'd ask Big Brian, like, hey, what's wrong with Little Brian? And it was like, if you just watched them on video, they said the same things, but one of them really knew how to use tone and empathy and relationship building. The other one was more sterile and it was more transactional. It was like both great guys, both really nice guys, both two people, you know, you'd want to go have an iced tea with. But at the end of the day, the relationship building, and when people would walk in, they would ask for Big Brian. He was able to connect with people on a human level and the other Brian just struggled with that.
He was more robotic, if you will. I'm not saying that he spoke like that. But Greg, I think it goes back to knowing your communication style. And if you're going to communicate with an outgoing individual and you're not necessarily, then you're not going to get as much unless you get inside and speak to them in their tone or their language set. Do you guys do that a lot in your classes?
All the time, especially like just, and it's a no-brainer. It's just not done regularly. Like just the emphasizing just benefits first selling. Like we're not selling brake fluid. Technically we are, but we're selling safety, right? And the peace of mind and the control around that. And understanding that concept of how people want to know how they win, you know, it doesn't matter if they're going to give you $200, $2,000, what are they going to get in return? If we can speak in those terms using the right cadence and tone and, you know, you've built the trust, right, on the front end, then, I mean, doesn't matter what you're selling, doesn't matter the price point, you're going to get more yeses. And even if you don't get yeses, because you have that emotional connection with people, if you get an objection, it's going to be way easier to handle because these people trust you. They want to know your opinion, right? They want to know, okay, if I can't afford this, what are my options? They'll be way more open to listening to an advisor that they trust and like, or just view as an expert and have a discussion, even if there is a little bit of, you know, I'm not fully sold yet. Well, help me walk me through this. That's a way easier job than someone who hasn't done the work to earn the trust and highlight their tone and sell the benefits first.
Jen, you say trust an awful lot here. Is it a fragile thing?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I was in this position as just your average consumer. My husband's in beer. My dad's a contractor. I never had like a person, a guy or a gal I could trust with my cars. I had a Ford Mustang back in college that I just drilled into the ground. Extreme heat, you know, didn't have a shop that I really believed in what they were telling me. I was never educated in it. They never showed me anything. And so I probably should have gotten at least another 5-7 years out of this car and just destroyed it. I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better until I started working in this space.
You beat it to death.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I couldn't call dad from a different state and say, what do I do? He didn't know. You know, he can build houses. He doesn't know anything about cars. I never found a company that would take the time and care
to invest in you,
to educate me. Took me a while to figure that out. That there are good guys out there and good gals out there that really want to help their communities and educate them and connect with them on a personal level. I just never had that experience.
Imagine sitting down with Jen, Greg, and I'm a service advisor at a shop. And I look at her and I say, or I'm on the phone and says, I'm going to make you a key dropper.
If she said that to a customer?
Yeah. What do you mean by that? No, like, and trust me that you just dropped the keys. Here's what's wrong. I'll be back at 5. Tell the customer that. Tell the customer what you're going to do. Here's why you're here. I'm going to make you a key dropper. What's that? Somebody who knows, like, and trusts us at every part of every transaction.
And that's the aha moment I hope everyone walks away from our training classes with, is like, what is this message? What is this feeling that you're going to say from your heart, right? Where you're going to, like, personally pitch your, like, what you're there to do for them. We have them work through these exercises and understand what that means to them. You know, if they don't believe it, they're not going to say it or use it. But how can we deliver 5-star service, Ritz-Carlton, whatever you want to call it, by expressing that, showing that, sharing it with our customers? We can't just assume they know that, right? And I think a lot of service advisors think that, oh, look at our marketing, or, you know, we've got multiple locations. They know we're the good guys. No, like, they got to feel that every touch point on the phone, in person, not just the first visit, but the 10th visit, right?
You know, one thing we try and really uncover, Carm, is the importance of the owners to be part of this process. A lot of owners like, oh, yeah, I sent my guy or gal to a service advisor class. They did a little bit better, but I don't know if it was worth it. So number one, they need to know what the material is. They need to be invested in it. They need to hold people accountable. They need to talk through it, because there's things, what I tell everybody, that our courses are a buffet. You take what you want, you put it into your mix. You know, if you don't like broccoli, if you don't like chicken or whatever, then don't take it. But there's a lot of really good stuff you can put on your plate and put into your business. And so getting the owners to buy in and be a component of this. And the other thing that I talk to owners about, like, if I'm a commissioned service advisor, why on earth would I tell somebody no? You can't come in today, got to come in next week. Why would I tell them no? Well, to me, there's a systematic problem that if you have not set your advisor up to be able to say yes for a customer to come in and get the, at least get their car looked at for their initial concern, we have a systematic problem, right? And again, it's like nothing worse than being a sales guy and you sell car stereos and there's no inventory. You know, you don't have anything to sell. And so an advisor, what they have to sell is that inspection. You got to give them the leeway to be able to do that. And so that's an important part of why we want the owners involved as well, is are you setting up your advisors to be able to be successful? And of course, the other thing, and I, you know, going back to the word trust that Jen brings up, you know, your advisors have to trust the inspections and the diagnostic work of your technicians. And I've seen that before. How come we don't sell any work for Joe? Well, you know, nobody trusts Joe's inspections. Nobody trusts Joe's diagnostics. But yet the shop owner is afraid to deal with that. And so we just let this problem circle around in the shop. And who loses in that? The customer loses.
Greg, I love your point. If you're an owner and you're going to invest in your counter team, and you're not totally on board with the kind of learning and education that you're providing for them, and you hear stuff going on and you go up and say, no, we don't do that stuff here, then you've just wasted your money. But if you're not the professional, then let the professional do it and trust them. I've asked this to a lot of service advisor trainers, Greg, and they said, no, we don't go forward without the owner on board. Because I think a few years back, it got pretty bad where the trainers don't even want to train the people anymore, knowing that when they're done, yeah, maybe they got their money and they did a good job in training them, but this person is back into that negative spiral and nothing changed in the business. If you're going to go out and get coaching from Greg on finance and leadership and all that stuff, it's going to you. You're practicing it. You're implementing it. You're getting it done. You have an advocate to help you. Don't abandon your service people because you're not in the class.
You know, we teach a, like, for instance, next week, going to be in the Denver area, we'll have shop owners come. We'll have, you know, their district managers come. It's not just the service advisors. And I love it when the teams come, if they can swing it, right? It's so powerful. They're sitting there. You literally see the light bulbs turn on and they're brainstorming and frivolously taking notes on how they can tweak their process, or first thing Monday, what are they going to change, or what's no longer being said over the phone, as an example. You know, what are these protocols they want to implement? And it's so great to see leaders be there. And now they can hold their people accountable, but they're bought into it too, right? They hear it from the horse's mouth. They know how to also help hold them accountable and what to listen for, what to watch. It is tough. You know, it is tough if you send someone to a one-off training, an advisor, and then they got to come back and regurgitate it to the whole team, right? They got to sell these ideas to the whole team or their counterparts. Or management, that's a tough role for them, especially if it's so much content, right? They're trying to just swallow it themselves.
Because when you teach, you learn. So if an individual came back and, as you said, regurgitate or reteach, even if it's not in a lunch and learn thing, but if it's, you know, me and a couple of others and we spend an hour every day for the next week or 2 weeks to tell you what I learned and how it's going to work, and then watch me, listen to me, feel what I'm doing. Let me help you, then that individual almost takes a leadership role in this. And then maybe, just maybe, you pick up that phone and say, hey, who's the next that's coming in? Because I believe we equipped, you know, Sally to go out and come back and teach, but it's nothing like what you're going to get when you come to class.
But the kicker is having that shop owner engaged and involved, right?
Why wouldn't they be? I'm asking a facetious question. Why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, right? You would think.
That's an issue that we have. And I'm putting all of these issues under the word professionalism, Greg, of late. I mean, I can't stop talking about the word professionalism on our podcast. And that is, you're going to be a professional in the auto repair service industry or not. You decide. What are you going to do? And if you're going to be a professional, then here's how you need to behave, and here's the education you need to get, and here's the changes you need to have. Because you weren't birthed or born in the bays to be a professional. And I pontificate on my soapbox.
Well, there's been, you know, over the last 20 years, there haven't been a lot of voices saying that message. Guys, it's time we become more professional, right? You hear me say a part of the Transformers motto is to help take the black eye off the industry. Well, let's be real. We deserve a little bit of it. You know, there's a reason that the aftermarket automotive repair has some of the reputation that it does, and it's going to take a level of professionalism to take that off. And I think, you know, if I had a crystal ball, the next 10 or 15 years is really going to show the separation between those that operate in a professional manner, run a professional business, and the people that don't. They're just, I don't think they're going to be able to survive. I think it's got to change.
10 or 15, that sounds on the heavy side. I've been saying 8 to 12. It's not that it's that much further, but I think there could be some way accelerated drop-offs in the next, say, even 5 years. Because, and again, we could sit and start talking about the state of the economy right now and how busy people are, and are they paying attention? Are they in the right mental zone, process, systems, everything, to take the challenges that exist today? We're going to get ready to do an episode on what do you think the industry is going to look like in just 5 years? To me, I love to get what's going on inside people's heads. Pay attention to that stuff. Use your intuition. Make change. I mean, this is right up your alley, Greg. This is what you've been doing for years.
As technology continues to change and evolve and AI and all that, I think a lot of people are looking for that to kind of be their savior in this. Oh, I'll have my AI train my advisors. I'll have AI send out my estimates. I'll have AI talk to my customers. No, we're in the people business, and people buy from people, not computers that they know, like, and trust. That doesn't mean you can't use AI as a tool in your toolbox. You know, just like when I started, right? You know, on old air-cooled Volkswagens, there was no OBD port, right? You had to figure it out. And so, yeah, just because technology has changed and now we can read waveform patterns or whatever on data streams doesn't mean that you still don't need somebody to go in there and actually fix the car.
And it's, trust is just so fragile in today's landscape, right? So you got to have the bridge. You got to leverage the technology to help you be more efficient. You can't lose touch of the personal side.
The whole idea, this episode, we titled this People 101, Why Soft Skills Drive Hard Results. Jen, what did we not cover that you'd like to, you know, bring up?
Going back to just getting to know people, handshakes. God forbid we shake someone's hand. Looking people in the eyes, asking the right questions that are strategic and thoughtful. You know, just clarifying people's needs and goals. It's just crazy how we forget the basics and making them feel good about what they're buying, like reselling them, telling them they've made really good decisions. I think one thing that we're falling short of is, and you kind of mentioned this, Greg, and I didn't want to go off subject, but we're really big on the one thing that if you're a really great shop that sets you apart are your people. Why aren't we talking about our people, our technicians, the type of service we're going to provide, leadership? What really sets you apart in your industry is probably the fact that we can only get this gifted guru or surgeon at your shop. How are we not even mentioning them or giving even like a shop tour so they can see there's an actual doctor working on the sick patient in the back? We lose sight of just that simple stuff. And that creates a lot of that trust that our landscape is lacking, right?
You just nailed it, Jen, when you said, listen, I've got this top person. Listen, my technologist, my technology specialist, we sent him to 80 hours of training to keep current with this computer you're driving. Happens just to have to have four rubber wheels on it, but that's a computer. Have you noticed your dad? I love your dashboard. It's his why. The dashboard is his. Goes over to the passenger compartment. How the heck can you see?
I was talking to a client the other day. We were talking about this exact topic. And he said, what I tell a customer when they come in, he goes, you know, when you go to the dealer, there's like 30 technicians and you never know who you're going to get. And there's probably really only three really good ones. Well, those are the three that are working for me. So everybody here that works for me is a specialist, was at the top of their game, rather than, you know, playing Russian roulette with which technician you're going to get if you go to the dealership. I'm like, man, that's a good way to put it.
Even like, do they treat every car like their own? Like, I would love to know that my technician actually cares and pours his heart into fixing these cars as if it was his. That would make mom, you know, the driver of my three-year-old, feel a little bit more confident in that this person actually likes what they do, cares about what they do. And it doesn't even have to be about their skill set. I mean, of course, that's huge, but it doesn't always have to be.
I usually say how well they take care of their mom's car, because us technicians don't always take good care of our cars.
Okay, true.
Yeah, so I mean, that's exactly what I thought of, Greg. Thank you for saying that. Oh, perfect. Anyway, Greg, final words.
Before you spend a bunch of money on marketing and trying to figure out what else is wrong with your shop, if you don't have good phone skills, if you don't know how to get people off the phone into the shop, treat them well, turn them into key droppers, as Jen said, that's the very first place. Obviously, we have a marketing service, we do coaching, we have masterminds, we have a bunch of other stuff, and they all have a great ROI. But the ROI that we've seen people get from getting involved with either our three-day sales training, which is a, you know, live intensive, and now we've come out with some online training. It's a mix of the videos along with coaching with Jen. We're just seeing amazing, amazing results in all areas of the business. Technicians are happier, owners are happier, customers are happier, reviews are going up, bank accounts are going up. So there's not a better investment that you can make in getting the right people at the front counter doing the right things. And we're certainly here to help. And that's why our contribution to help transform the industry.
Thank you so much. TransformersInstitute.com, Greg Bunch and Jen Davis here with us. But best of luck to your continued commitment to the industry and all this great training that you're doing. Appreciate the inspiration and lively discussion today. We're talking about soft skills drive hard results and a whole lot of empathy that you fix $99 brake jobs.
That's right.
Thanks for being here, everyone.
You bet. Thank you, Carmen. Great to see you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.